this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Last weekend, we treated to our first fight back at the UFC Apex, with a fairly solid card all around. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a small card, but it was good.
Yeah. I think this is one of them cards where we all looked at it and thought, okay, this is... It might not be the most exciting fight card to get us back into the UFC Apex, but it's a card nonetheless. Before we go any further, I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week, it goes back to the OG, the man with whom it began, it's the one and only Liam Heffernan. So before we kick off our recaps, if you head over to Ultimate MMA Extra, you'll find an exclusive one-to-one interview with our guy, Nathaniel the Prospect Wood, who spoke about his win over John Castaneda at UFC Fight Island, and what is next for the former Cage Warriors Bantamweight Champion. So, to start recapping our last weekend's events, Liam, what did you think of the card overall?
Yeah, I think it's sort of back to normal, really, because a lot of the cards, particularly on Fight Island, we were really heavy on submissions and knockouts, but I think there was a really disproportionate amount of submissions on Fight Island. This feels like a much more normal card, sort of half decision, half finish. I don't think there was really anything that's going to stand out at the end of the year, but a lot of good fights.
Yeah, so for me, it was a bit of a shocker because I wasn't really absolutely raving about this card anyway. And to me, the whole card kind of felt like an undercard or an early main card. Like, the calibre of fights to me just wasn't at a level that we've come to expect from the UFC recently. However, we were definitely met with some crazy results. I mean, let's start off with a fight that was the least shocking of them all. Vicente Luque's demolition of Randy Brown. What did you think?
Yeah, I think this is a masterclass from Luque in how to beat someone that's taller and longer than you. You know, I think anyone that watched the fight could tell that he was just waiting for that leg kick from Brown, and as soon as he got it, he moved inside, countered, and landed a few shots, and then come back out again. That's how the whole fight played out, and it worked brilliantly. Brown just had no response for it, and I think as soon as there was a leg kick in round two, wasn't there, where it just took him down. Yep. And from that point on, you knew that the finish was just a matter of time.
Yep. I mean, for me, this had Luque written all over it. Just pure violence. Two knockdowns in the fight and a TKO to finish late in round two, I believe it was. And that just capped off a very solid performance all around. He came in as the favourite and he really proved why he was that. And for me, it kind of now says that I think he's ready now to challenge a lot of the guys in the top 10 of the welterweight division. Luque's had a strange career at the UFC so far. He's really cementing himself as a familiar name, but he debuted in the promotion 5 years ago, and I think he's had 14, maybe even 15, if you count as the Ultimate Fighter fights in the UFC. So 14 fights in the UFC, and when you consider that his record's 19-7, it really makes you think where he stands in the sport. So, for me, he needs a bigger test next. Wonderboy was his biggest test, and that's when he came up short. So, I'd like to see him face Jeff Neal next, if obviously Neal beats Magny. And then I'd like to maybe see him face a top 5 or top 6 opponent and really go for gold now, because he puts on great fights. He really does. He's become to know now for this idea that he just puts on violent performances and in general, all around, has a very good game. But now he needs to put these on against the sport's best guys.
Yeah.
He's only lost twice in the UFC, which, as I said, if you've had 14 fights in it, that's scarily impressive to only use two of them. But they were against Wonderboy and Leon Edwards. So now I would like to see him start facing more guys that really prove he has what it takes to go for that title, because if not, I don't necessarily see where he's going.
Yeah, I agree. And I think many would probably argue that Luque was at a point of challenging at that kind of level about a year ago. I think he definitely has an entertainment value to him, which always helps. You know, I think Dana White is always going to put you on a higher billing if he knows that you're going to get people talking. So he's got that in his favour. But yeah, I agree completely. I think now's his time. He needs to take it. He's going to get a big fight and he needs to win.
Absolutely. So next up is a bit of a shocker, really. Jennifer Meyer submitting JoJo Calderwood in the first round of the co-main event. I mean, first things first, this wasn't at all what I expected. I mean, I think I said on the podcast when me and Sean were talking that it could happen, that a submission could happen, but I just didn't expect this. I mean, the girls exchanged for a bit, but then it was all about that armbar that forced JoJo to tap. I was genuinely sad to see Calderwood lose, as I know she wouldn't need another fight potentially, but I just see that title shot slipping away from her more and more. And I've said it before, but I'd love the chance of another UK UFC champion. And I guess for me, it was just a shame to see that, because although taking nothing away from Maya, fantastic performance, I just felt my heart drop when I saw the armbar locked in. I thought, this is not what I want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I called it. I said Maya would get a submission, and unfortunately, so I've got to say, I would also love nothing more than to see a British fighter in a title fight, and I think with both Till and Calderwood losing in recent weeks, that's looking a little bit less likely in the next year.
I think you've got to say now it's got to be Leon Edwards is probably the next guy. Obviously, I think his next fight, it might be Gilbert Burns, but overall, I'm not sure how far away his title shot is, but I think he's probably the most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing as well to discuss in that fight for me is what's next from here. Well, it was announced yesterday that Maya will be receiving her title shot against Valentina Shevchenko at UFC 255 on November the 21st. And
I bet Joanna is gutted about that as well, because that would have been her.
Well, exactly, but once more, you can't take anything away from Maya. She deserves this. I mean, me and Sean spoke about this the other week, was that the winner of this was likely to get the title shot, or Calvillo may have, but I'm glad Maya has, to be honest. I think that Calvillo needs to face Shukagin for the number one contender spot, and I think Maya has this shot to prove that she can go from an Invicta champion to the UFC champion. She's never faced Valentina before, which offers a great fight for the fans. And it's interesting because, as I said, Valentina now has a new challenge. Valentina's faced Shukagin before, so maybe someone like Calderwood or Maya will just spice things up a little bit. And having said this, I do still think Valentina wins that matchup, because I think all around Valentina's an incredible fighter. I think we saw Maya struggle against Shukagin. So I think that kind of offers a similar fight here, is it's a bit of a reciprocating circle. I mean, Valentina's just at the top of that food chain, and she is going to stay there for a long time, in my opinion.
See, I would slightly disagree. I think if any of the current women's champions are most vulnerable to losing the title, I would say it's Shevchenko. And combined with the fact that she's taken this fight off the back of injury, I think this could be a really interesting fight.
I think that's a fair shout, for sure. I think when you say about, I guess, that out of all the women champions, I think Astrophysica's all the women champions are so bloody good.
They are
so good at what they do, and they really are setting the best examples there. But as you said, that's an interesting process as well, coming off injury. I've said for all, since the fight with Calvillo and I potentially think Calvillo's the most dangerous opponent, just because her jiu-jitsu game is so strong. I know Maya's the same, but I just think maybe Calvillo's a bit of a fresher fighter who can stand there in the striking department as well. But we shall see. So, to finalise our recap of last week's UFC card, we have to talk about the main event. Sadly, we have to, and holy damn, once more, I did not see this coming. Massive props to Derek Brunson for pulling this off and just going in there and looking like the experienced veteran that he is. He went in and he gave Edmund his first career loss, and he did it in really impressive fashion. To me, Edmund never really looked comfortable in there, and that's due to the style that Brunson brings to the fight. He made it rough and smothered Edmund, and just overall, he didn't allow him to get any of his pacing or his rhythm going, and he just kept Shabazzian at bay for the entire fight. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting fight, because Shabazzian is such an intelligent fighter. But because of that, I think he's so used to controlling the fight, and he generally finds an opportunity to finish it in the first round. He sort of darts around, dodges the strikes, and then just lands a big finish. He's done it time and time again. He's not used to the kind of fight that Brunson brought, who sort of really came at him without fear of getting hit, like most fighters are, because he knew he could hit harder and he could hit more. And I think Brunson also has a bit of unpredictability about him, the sort of variety of shots, the level changes, the takedowns. It wasn't the type of fight that Shabazzian was used to, and I think before the third round even started, we could all tell that it was going to be over. But that said, I think Shabazzian is still a future champion, and I think he's such a mature fighter for his age, and if he takes this opportunity to just reflect and learn from that loss, I think he'll be in a position to level up and take on top five fighters.
Well, I actually totally agree with you. I think you've put a good few points. I do think he's a huge champion as well. I think he's a phenomenal fighter. And as I think we will see him get his shot at, say, maybe five fights down the line, I think he really is deserving of being in the UFC. But as you said, he's used to fights where he can control them in the first round, and he just never got that opportunity. I mean, I think he landed something like 33 strikes or so, and Brunson landed over 100.
Yeah.
And that's just how good he looked. And also, I was surprised at the stoppage, because I didn't think it was controversial at all, but I just think that he beat Edmund physically and mentally.
Yeah,
I think he just ended up dragging him down to the mat.
Yeah.
Which is when Herb called off the fight. And as I said, I don't think it was controversial. It was an early stoppage. I just think it's in that Edmund didn't want to be in there, and that Brunson really showed what he was about in that fight. For me, it's really shaking up the lower half of the top 10 rankings, because it offers quite a few exciting matchups now to be made. I see Brunson facing possibly the winner of Romero versus Hall next. He beat Hall 4 years ago, but lost to Romero 6 years ago. So they have history with both of these fighters, and the winner of these guys would be, I think, ranked one place higher than him. So to me, it makes sense, but also there may be other plans for them guys. I'd also like to see Shabazi face Gastelum, or vice versa with the above. Brunson and Gastelum offers a fun fight, but Shabazi and Gastelum are both coming off losses, and in general, they offer, I think they're both in a very similar position in the ranks, 9th and 10th.
That's a good fight to make.
Yeah. However, I also don't know if the UFC will allow Shabazi to reset here and offer him a fight that's kind of below him to get his record going up a bit again, and before returning to kind of the big leagues, before looking at guys in kind of the top 5 position. So I also see him getting a guy like Vettori, who I think is ranked 13th, which is once more a very hard fight. But he might also get, say, the winner of Akhmedov versus Weidman this weekend.
Yeah.
I think they might offer him someone who's maybe a fight or two below him, just that not necessarily gives him an easy win at all, but definitely doesn't give him a very, very hard fight where, say, he might want a double loss, because he does look like a prospect. So
yeah.
I still think there's a bright future for this guy, and I'd like to see him bounce back quickly and show off what skill set he well and truly has.
Yeah, and I think it goes without saying that the UFC are clearly fully behind Shabazian, so I think they're going to do everything they can to help him get back on track, because I think we all kind of want to see a title fight in a couple of years.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. So before we go into our previews of the weekend's card, I also want to talk about some of the Bellator MMA results from last night, and you guys should definitely tune in to these fights in the future. Now, I'm fairly confident in saying that some of the competition offered at Bellator is nowhere near the standard the UFC offers. I mean, some of the guys they offer, their records are kind of one-on-one or anything like that. However, there are definitely some fighters that are worth talking about. Firstly, Valerie Lareda has been catching the attention of a lot of those in the MMA world, and the Taekwondo black belt showed once more last night that she is one for the future. I think she's 22 years of age, and she's really doing great things in the world of MMA. I think last night sent her 3-0. She finished her opponent Tara Graf by TKO last night. Actually, I think it's even gone down as a KO, literally on the buzzer of the second round. I think it's gone down as 5 minutes five minutes in the second round exactly. So she came with an overhand right that literally switched Graf's lights out for a second, folded her, and then she went in for a ground and pound finish. It was honestly a really, really good showing from such an impressive talent. So once more, get on to Valerie Lareda game. She looked brilliant. And I said, it looks like they're going to push her definitely to be one of their tokens for the next year or two. Now, you also had Chris Lencioni versus AJ Agazan. This one was a really exciting bout. And I think AJ's been tipped this next level grappling sensation, whereas Lencioni is this kind of pretty boy, funny guy who puts up a great fight, and this fight really lived up to the expectation. These two honestly hate each other, and in the pre-fight week it was just the amount of, it was bad blood between them. Lencioni likes to wind people up, and that's exactly what he was doing. And throughout the fight they were even trash talking each other, and there was illegal shots thrown and whatnot. There was There was a headbutt at one point, so Axam had him and Lencioni down on the floor, and said headbutted him, which he's claiming Lencioni pulled him towards him, but no, there's no doubt that was a headbutt. Then at the end of both rounds as well, Lencioni would finish on top of him, and he'd sit there and he'd stare at him for a few seconds as the buzzer went. So Axam would throw some kicks at him and push him off him. Once more, it was just a really dirty fight, and right at the end as well, the decision went to Lencioni, and then they went to shake hands. Axam stormed off, throwing a little strop, and Beltran, Mike Beltran, the ref, was forced to go in there, and he literally grabbed Axam, brought him back, and tried to force him to shake hands. It was genuinely such an entertaining fight, not necessarily for actual fighting that went down, but just from the perspective of, I guess, entertainment. But also, it's worth noting from a respect point, AJ Aguilar needs to grow off a bit. I mean, he lost the fight, which is always a shame, but he was being pathetic. He was like a kid. So I think that he really needs to rethink before returning to the cage, because honestly, he's got so much maturing to do in order to reach that high potential that many people think he has. And as I said, people should go watch Chris Lencioni versus AJ Aguilar to kind of understand where, as a fighter with so much talent in the octagon, that his headset's not there at the moment. I think that sent him 3-2 in his career. And as I said, that it was a very entertaining fight to watch, and it's an interesting fight to watch if you want to see a different perspective of the sport. It's not, don't get me wrong, we always want to see quality fighting, but if you want to see a fight which had more bad blood involved and it was a bit more like a showboating fight, that one's definitely one to watch. And finally, although there were other cracking fights on that card, the main event between Benson Henderson and Mike Chandler, and how did this end? I mean, I sent you the video this morning, but wow, what a finish this was by Mike Chandler.
Yeah, I mean, there's finishes that are just power, but then there's this, which is just impressive. You know, you just land the perfect shot in right on the temple, and it just takes you out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so he KO'd the UFC veteran Benson Henderson in just over 2 minutes of the first round with some clean strikes. I mean, he hit him with a great 1-2 combo and then finished off with grounded pound strikes that just put Henderson out. As I said, the 1-2 combo knocked Henderson down where he was able to cover up, but then, as I said, the grounded pound, I think it once more got down as a KO. I think it did actually knock him out for a few seconds. I mean, for me, now I would love to see Mike get another title shot. He's 21-5 now in the sport, which is a fantastic record, and is coming off, I think, 2 KO victories now over seriously good opponents. I know that he lost to Fredy or Pitbull for the title, but as I said, I think he's very worthy of that. I think he's probably like the weight division's top talent, especially for the belt next, but we'll have to see where he goes, because there was also talk about him leaving Bellator and joining the UFC recently, which is another very enticing proposition. I mean, I think there's no doubt that he would bolster the UFC lightweight division.
Yeah, I think it's a division that's sort of stagnating a little bit, because you've got Khabib, who seems very sort of flaky in terms of the fights he's taking. I mean, he fights, what, once a year? And everyone just talks about McGregor, and for a while it was like Tony Ferguson. I just think there needs to be some new prospects in this division, because at the moment it's strong, but once all of those fighters start to step away, you've got to ask, like, who's there?
Exactly. Well, also, it's interesting to note with Khabib is that people are talking about Khabib's retirement now. So is it going to happen that he's going to face Gaethje, potentially get the win there, and then go for that super fight with GSP, which has been hinted at quite a few times? I'm not sure it's going to happen, but
no.
As I said, if that did happen, he would go to 30-0 and retire there. And there's been talks about how he had these conversations with his father, and that's what him, his uncles, think that that's what he would like to do now. But as I said, whether this does go down, I'm not sure. But I totally agree that just offering some new names in that lightweight division as well to really spice things up a bit, and offer not just prospects who are coming up, but also chuck a guy in there who is proven, who's a former champion, and as I said, looked very, very dangerous. It just kind of gives... It's like when Gaethje joined the UFC as well. He was the former PFL champ. He was this guy who was known, I think he was 18-0 at that time. that's the type of people I like to see go straight in as well, because he got his first fight with Michael Johnson, I believe it was. Then he had Poirier after that. Then Eddie Alvarez. Do you know what I mean? He didn't need that kind of easy route in, where he had a few soft fights against, like, say veterans who may be on their way out now of the sport. Yeah. He went straight in there, and as I said, I think that's something that Chandler could do as well. So we'll have to see. But that is our recap of last weekend's event complete. Now, we're moving on to our preview of Saturday night's UFC card, where heavyweights collide as Derek Lewis takes on Alexei Oleichik. Before we talk about our main event, let's talk about our co-main event, where the former champ, Chris Weidman, returns to the middleweight division to face Omari Akhmedov. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think as we saw from the Luque fight, height isn't everything, but I think Weidman's 5-inch advantage probably won't hurt him. He's a fighter who prefers to be on his feet, but I think, along with Akhmedov, that he's no stranger to being on the ground and getting a submission if he needs to. That said, I think just look at both fighters' form. Weidman has lost 5 of his last 6 fights. Akhmedov is on a 5-fight streak. And actually, also interesting to note, Weidman's only win from that came from a triangle choke. So although Akhmedov has about an 80% submission rate, I wouldn't be surprised if this goes to the floor. But you've got to say the smart money is on a decision for Akhmedov.
Yeah, well, so I actually think this is exactly the fight that Chris needed. And I'll tell you why. Not because I think it's an easy fight, but because these guys are very similar in their styles. Both their wrestling is elite. They do have good striking as well. And I think if Chris can't cut it with Omari this weekend, then I think he should move to a different promotion or call it a day overall. And that's why I think it's the fight that Chris needs, because it's going to prove to him whether he can still do this now.
Yeah.
As you said, he's only won 1 of his last 6. And prior to that, he'd never lost in his career. So he's lost 5 times in his last 6 fights, which if that was anyone else, they'd be cut.
Yeah.
Sorry, Karen.
And that's in 5 years, by the way. So he's won 1 fight since 2015.
Exactly. Don't get me wrong, he has faced some seriously good guys with KO power. So I wasn't actually surprised that he lost. But when he went from an undefeated champion to a guy with a glass jaw across basically 3 years, really, though, because I think the last fight was 2019 and 2016 was when he started to get his losses in. As I said, across that time, you think, wow, that's a big shock. So now he comes against a guy who doesn't really offer the same KO power. It's not to say he couldn't KO Weidman, but he's not known for getting, say, like a knockout like Romero did, etc.
Yeah.
So I think we see this fight going to a decision. And for me as well, pressure is off for Akhmedov. I mean, Weidman isn't currently ranked, and Chris is expected to prove a point here. Omari can play the underdog a bit and kind of sit back and let Chris put the effort in, because Akhmedov can wrestle with Chris. I'm confident he can do that. So Weidman needs to look for the finish. He needs to go in there, and he needs to really get something going and kind of show off a great skill set, which he hasn't really been able to see now for a long time. As you said, his last finish was against Kelvin Gastelum a couple of years ago. I think that was 3 fights ago for him. But other than that, he once more has not really been able to get any sort of damage onto people, where it hasn't just been a bit of ground and pound or kind of some decent strikes, but nothing that you're seeing people wobble with.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm actually going to be backing the former champion, because I still think there's a beast in there. However, I think we really need to see that champion's heart now, because he needs to go in there and do what he does best, which is wrestling. I think he's a former All-American wrestler, and I think we need to see him go in there and do, and as I said, do what he does best. But I also think if he can't get in there and he can't get comfortable, he can't go into this fight and dictate the pace and make a slow fight where the decision might go his way. I think he needs to go in there and smolder Omari the entire time to get either a convincing win or, as I say, a finish. We need to basically ask, is Chris Weidman back? But also, as you said, I think there might be a smart decision as well to look at Akhmedov and say, well, we might get out this decision victory. Because, as I said, Weidman really needs to go in there and he needs to show that he was the champion at one stage. And as I said, I think if the first round we see him play a slow fight, I don't necessarily see Weidman returning. Mm. Even if he wins that fight, if he takes 3 rounds where he kind of SA gets a win, but it's not necessarily convincing. Once more, I'm not convinced that Wideman's back.
Yeah, I agree. He needs to put himself back on the radar, and he's got to get a finish, I think, to do that.
Exactly. And then, as I said, that hasn't come in a while. So, now on to our final chapter, the main event between Derek Lewis and Alexei Oleichik. I mean, this bout to me does not scream main event. But what does at the moment, let's be honest? We've had a few where we've gone, oh, this ain't too great. I said, I think Till Whitaker was the last time that I went, well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Other than that, we've had some quite questionable bouts. I'm excited for this either way because I think the result offers an exciting adventure. Lewis can get a win over a heavily experienced guy and prove why he is a top 5 guy. However, Oleichik can definitely defy the odds and send a shockwave out there that still says he is in it at 43 years old. I mean, to me, this fight goes one of two ways. I'm fairly confident in a finish in round one or two. And I don't think these guys could go all 5 rounds, although I'm not going to lie, my calls recently have been god-awful. However, I think maybe Oleichik could ride out the first round and then get Derek down and submit him in the second round. Yeah. We've seen Derek struggle a lot in the past against elite-level grapplers, and I think that's what Oleichik needs to do. I think he needs to ride the initial storm that Derek possesses, because we know that Derek has crazy KO power, so he needs to be able to reduce that and get in there close so Derek can't swing into things. And then you guys is far superior grappling skills. And as I said, that is far. Maybe Lewis has the advantage in the sense that he comes in heavy and he's a very, very powerful guy anyway. But as I said, I think if Oleichik can get Lewis down, I think we're going to see the finish. And we know that Oleichik can do it off his back. We know he can do it on mount. Oleichik overall can submit anyone at any point.
Yeah.
However, the other way that I do see this going is Lewis by absolute murder. I think the scariest weapon he has isn't just the power in his hands, but the fact that he can pull it off at any time. And we saw that against Volkov. He was down bad 3 rounds. And then in the final, was it 10 seconds of the fight? He KO'd the Russian clean. Like I said, it was just... It came out of nowhere, really. I think Volkov got a little bit confident, a little bit. He let himself have his guard down. But as I said, overall, after 3 rounds, despite the fact that Lewis gasses quite early on, he still had that power. So I think this is what Lewis needs to do early on. He needs to go in for the finish, as Alexei isn't the fastest of heavyweights. So I think that Derek definitely excels in the striking department. And even if Alexei tries some jabs, etc., closing the distance and coming in with an overhand right or even switch up with uppercut will turn things out early on. As I said, I think if he comes in there and really goes for that knockout, I think he could get it, because Alexei isn't the fastest. And as I said, I think if he gets caught maybe once or twice, I think he's going to go out. But having said this, I genuinely don't know which way this one's going to go. What do you think?
Yeah, so I made a few notes before this podcast, and it said exactly the same as you. It had either Oleichik round 2 submission or Derek Lewis early knockdown. He'll control the fight. I think it's a really interesting bout to make, because, as you said, they're both veterans. You know, Lewis is 35, so he's not young, and they're both on the 2-fight win streak as well. So I think They've both got a lot to fight for, because you have to say whoever loses, maybe not so much Lewis, but whoever loses is going to struggle to work their way back up the rankings. I think Lewis is going to struggle. I think he needs to go in fast in the first round and get a knockdown to tell Oleichik that he's there to fight. As you say, once it goes down to the ground, I think he's going to struggle a lot. And I think the problem with heavyweights as well is that the grappling game and the submission game is a little bit alien to them. For the most part, heavyweights like to be on their feet and they like to strike. Yeah. So that's why Oleichik is so dangerous once he gets the takedown. And I genuinely think that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah, and as we said, we've seen Lewis struggle before with people who have great grappling skills, and Oleichik's one of the best. I think, what's his record, 58 and something or something.
Yeah.
Something similar, and most of them are submission wins, so there's no doubt that he will be comfortable in there. He will have confidence in the fact that he can finish his fight. But as I said, it's just about whether he can get Lewis down, because Lewis is a powerful guy. He obviously threatens at any point with being able to turn the lights out. So we'll have to see, because I wouldn't be surprised either way. The only way I think I'll be surprised is if Oleichik pulls off a striking masterclass over three rounds and just dominates him. And as I said, I don't see that happening. So that is our preview of Larkin's weekend's main event and co-main event complete. Before we sign off here today, we have some exciting fight announcements to talk to you about. The main one being the flyweight fight night in November. November 21st, to be exact. UFC 255, where Tyson Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt has been announced as the main event for the flyweight title. Liam, what do you think?
There is going to be fireworks in that fight, isn't there? It is going to be such a good one to watch. Like, this is the fight where you do not want to look away for a second.
Exactly. At any point, these two could turn each other's lights out. Yeah. They are so, so good in the striking department. Their pivot is going to be great. I do think it's worth noting as well, people have been a little bit upset that Cody has leapfrogged everyone, and quite rightfully. I am possibly one of the biggest Cody Garbrandt fanboys for a long time now. Even when he won against, I think it was Dominic Cruz back in 2017, or not even 2015 or 2016. It was a while ago. But in that fight, that was possibly the best fight that I've ever seen, in the sense that I just was on edge the entire time. I wanted Cody to win it, and he just put in this fantastic performance. So I was a big Cody Garbrandt fan for a long time, and even when he suffered his knockouts, I still loved Cody. However, he's come off three knockout losses, and then obviously has come back now and got his win over Rafael Dos Anjos. Great victory, but I think, what, he's sixth in the ranking? In the bantamweight ranking? He may have gone higher, after that. I think he was sixth when he fought Dos Anjos. He may have gone third or fourth.
Yeah, he's third in bantamweight now, but he's not even ranked in flyweight at the moment.
Exactly. I am not sure he deserves this shot to jump people like Brandon Moreno and Askarov as well. I do feel like the flyweights have been overlooked, but I think this is something that a lot of people have been upset at and saying, oh, of course Cody's going to get shot. But also, this is a super fight. This is what I called the other day. I think it was either to himself or to Sean. I was saying that I think Cody gets, Figueiredo gets this super fight next. And this is it. This isn't just about Cody. This is about Tyson. And I think that if you're going to be offered a guy like Askarov or Moreno, or you're going to be offered a guy like Garbrandt, going to take Garbrandt, because firstly, the money's tripled.
Yeah.
Secondly, as I said, the eyes that are going to be watching this fight now, I don't think there's many people, many UFC or even MMA fans who aren't going to tune into this. I think this is a fantastic fight, and as I said, I do get why people are upset, but I think people need to look at it from the sense of what this actually does for the flyweight division, because even if Cody doesn't win this fight, then it's still offered a super fight from the flyweight division.
Yeah.
And that's what we've needed for a long time. And to me, Cody moving down to 125 pounds is actually a very smart move, because I always thought he looked skinny for 135 pounds. What I mean by that is, you see guys like Petr Yan, Marlon Moraes, Jimmy Rivera at bantamweight, who look stocky and filled out, whereas Cody's always looked quite trim, slim and tall in that division. So I think he can make £125 easy. However, it asks that question, how much that actually takes out of his body and if his chin holds up at that weight class, because we know that Tyson is a killer striker. So if he can produce more of that on the night, it'll be a hard night for Cody. However, once more, Cody's striking is so quick. And when we used to see him KO guys at the weight class above flyweight. So we may also see Figgy's chin tested massively. These are both guys, as I said, who are coming off KO victories and overall have put, throughout their career, have been putting people's lights out. Now, the biggest test is obviously Cody moving down. How does his chin hold up there? but equally, Cody's used to knocking out heavier guys. How does Device's chin hold up against a guy like Cody? I'm just looking forward to this fight, and as I said, it's also worth noting, it's the flyweight fight night. Because following this is our co-main event for that night. As mentioned earlier, it's where Jennifer Meyer will challenge Valentina Shevchenko for the women's flyweight title, which is once more an incredible fight that will really look to create a night of killer, killer bouts. I don't necessarily know how I see that fight going other than Shevchenko winning it. I know you said that I think that Maya always has a great submission game, but for me, I just think Valentina all around is great. And I'm really not necessarily sure how Maya gets that victory, because we've seen Maya, we saw Maya struggling at Shukagian, and I just think Valentina is an enhanced version of that.
I think, you know, I maintain that Shevchenko is going to lose her title before the other two. I don't think this is the fight that she's going to do it. I feel like they're giving her Maya because I think it's a timing thing, and I think having just beaten Calderwood, it just felt like the right fight to make. I think Shevchenko has bigger challenges ahead. I don't see her holding up against Calderwood even. To be honest, I think that would be a bigger test for her than Maya. But I don't know. I mean, anything could happen. Maya is good on the ground. She obviously submitted Calderwood, so
exactly.
Upsets can happen, but you know.
I think I agree is that, yes, it could be an upset, and I think it would be an upset too. I don't think this is Valentina's toughest test, and I think she will have tough tests in the future, even if she loses this bout. I think Valentina said it was very good all round, and I totally agree as well. I think Calderwood probably offered the better fight. However, as I said, it could be an upset. I hope it doesn't go down that route, because although I don't think Maya would be a bad champion, I think Valentina is a very good champion. And as I said, I think down the line, there's going to be a more super fight to make. But in the time being, we do have to have Valentina active as well. And as I said, I do see her winning that. But I would find it a shame if Maya can get a submission finish. But I don't rule that out either. She is good. She's a former Invicta champion. So we can't rule that out. I mean, I can't wait to talk about UFC 255 a few months down the line. But we've also got another exciting announcement that came yesterday, that Corey Anderson has left the UFC and has joined Bellator.
Yeah,
what do you think of this?
It's crazy, isn't it? It just seemed to come out of nowhere. I mean, Corey Anderson is riding pretty high in the rankings. Just checking it now, he is... he's 4 at the moment in the rankings. You know, he's okay. He had a loss to Yan, but I don't think there's much shame in that. He beat Johnny Walker, who at the time was on a 3-fight win streak, had this massive hype train behind him. You know, he was doing pretty well in his division, so I don't really know where this has come from.
Well, what I think is, I totally agree in the sense that this is a shock. I didn't see this happening at all. I think, as you said, 4th in the ranking. You're 4th in the world at UFC, and you need the contract. I mean, that surely shows something's gone wrong. However, Corey has actually put a statement out there thanking UFC for handling the resignation so well, the release, sorry, I should say, so well. So, to me, maybe they've come to a level of terms, and I know that some of Corey's friends and his training partners have said that this is what he wanted. So, I believe it is down to Corey. But also, I noticed recently that it was about a week ago, Corey put this post out saying that after his loss to Yan, he suffered quite a lot. I think he had some brain damage in terms of, it might not have actually been officially gone down with brain damage, but he was struggling for quite a while.
Yeah.
He said that he kept collapsing when he was going to be out on walks and that. And he collapsed quite significantly once when he really scraped his face, and it was a long recovery period. He's had a really tough 5 months since that loss. I think this might have something to do with it. He noted at the end of that the officials, the ringside officials, did not do their job properly. I think he was hinting at the UFC saying that they didn't send him to the right checks afterwards, even after suffering obviously quite a bad KO loss. So potentially this is where that's come from. Maybe the UFC has said, yeah, we didn't do too much of a good job there, so he's got a payout for leaving and as I said, leaves fourth ranked in the world and goes obviously to Bellator, where he can still earn great money, he can get a title shot, and overall, kind of, as I say, get that money that he probably, I would suggest, maybe got some compensation for.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that might have been where this has come from. As I said, there's not many guys who would leave fourth ranked in the world for another promotion.
Yeah.
But potentially he's been upset with the way everything's been handled. Corey's had a rough time in the UFC anyway, but he has obviously learned a lot from it. And maybe he's on for that new challenge now. And I think that he's got a very exciting career ahead of him now at Bellator. So it's worth noting as well, Scott Coker, the president of Bellator MMA, has posted that Ryan Bader, the current light heavyweight champion and heavyweight champion, faces Vadim Nemkov on August the 21st of this month. And he has said that he thinks Corey would have his eyes peeled for that matchup. So, to me, this suggests Corey's first fight in Bellator will be for the title.
Yeah.
And as I said, if that's something that's come to an agreement as well at the UFC, in terms of, I know they can't necessarily affect what happened with Bellator, but if it was quite likely that he's going to get the shot, maybe that's why this has happened, is because he's gone, well, I could become a champion elsewhere.
Yeah.
I can get the money that I deserve actually fighting, but equally I can get my compensation for how I've been mistreated. I leave the UFC sort of behind closed doors, but happily. And everyone is good from there. There's no more politics. And as I said, if you're going to get offered a title fight straight away, which it seems exactly that's what he's going to get, you can't really blame the guy for it.
Yeah, seems like a win-win, really.
Yeah. And also, I think he offers Bader a very good fight. Bader's good. Bader's very good. And I think he's... I don't remember Bader's last fight, but I know that he did knock out Fedor for the title. I think that Bader offers a very hard fight for anyone, but I also think Corey's coming there, the younger guy, and just generally a very experienced fighter. Potentially Bader has been comfortable facing competition that hasn't been as good. Obviously, if Nemkov wins, then it also offers a new exciting challenge for Nemkov. But overall, I do think that Corey's got a nice bright future now ahead of him at Bellator, and I think there's some fantastic fights for Scott Coker to make there.
Yeah.
Yep, so for now, that is unfortunately all we have time for. So thank you guys for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to us. And be sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and then preview the next card, which takes place on August the 15th. And what a night we have in store. Miocic versus Cormier. The trilogy will be with us. I honestly cannot wait, mate. And that's for the heavyweight title in the co-main event. I think, yeah, the bantamweight standout, all-round fan favourite, Sugar Sean O'Malley, takes on Marlon Chito Vera in what's likely to be a contender for some form of bonus in the night. Genuinely, I can't wait to talk about next week's card. I think it's once more one of them fights where one of the fight nights now where we look at me go, yeah, this is exciting. This is some really good, exciting, enticing bouts, which, as I said, we haven't necessarily had for a while now, where we've had, say, five good bouts in a row, and I think that night offers that. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to our producer and co-host this week, Liam Heffernan, for jumping in and saving the day. It was an absolute pleasure, guys, and we look forward to next week's new MMA podcast, Ultimate MMA. Once more, thank you for tuning in, and take care of yourselves out there.